Due to an upturn in the economy, Main Street Business Loans has pre-approved the release of millions of dollars in small business funding. Your business may already be pre-approved to receive up to $250,000. We've sent out millions of pre-approval letters. We see the economy growing, and our underwriters believe now is the time to invest in your business so you can grow faster and make more money. And we're prepared to give you up to $250,000 to do it. Your funds can be available in 5 days. There are no application fees, no annual fees, just quick access to up to $250,000. If your business did not receive your approval letter to get up to $250,000, call Main Street Business Loans Approval Desk now.
800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. That's 800-430-7570.
From the campus of Yale University, this is Business Talk with Jim Campbell, nationally syndicated across the country on the Biz Talk Radio Network and coming to you from our flagship stations, Yale Radio WYBC and 1490 AM WGCH Greenwich. All talk and all business, 60 minutes of radio with leading figures from the world of business along with the business of politics and sports. A man who saved AIG after the financial crash and against all odds paid back the U.S. the full $182 billion government bailout plus interest. One of the great business turnarounds in American history. That's today on Business Talk with Jim Campbell. Bob Benmosche was CEO of AIG from 2009 to 2014, literally saving the company from bankruptcy and dismantlement, enabling it to repay debts to the government within 3 years. And prior to AIG, he was the CEO of MetLife for 8 years. Also a top executive at Payne Webber and Chase Manhattan Bank, tragically passing away in February of 2015. We're joined today in his honor by Bob's son, Ari Benmosche. He was a vice president of investments at AIG. And we're also joined by the co-author, Peter Marks, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, and from our flagship station, Yale Radio. He's an honors graduate of Yale. The book is Good for the Money, My Fight to Pay Back America. Welcome, Ari and Peter.
Thank you, Jim.
Great to have you guys on board. I'm going to start with Ari. It's almost as if he sacrificed his life for this, the intensity, the dedication, the focus. He also, in dealing with all the constituencies, Treasury, White House, Fed, other executives at AIG, seemed to, in many cases, piss people off, be a contrarian. Tell us a little bit about the person and how he thrived in this environment.
I guess to answer the first part of your question, he was always about what his legacy was, and his legacy was extremely important to him. So in that sense, he was willing to devote the rest of his life to it, and that's actually what he did. As far as all the various constituents, he was very outspoken on what leaders normally do, which is what they thought it was right, and if people disagreed with his position, he'd let them know. And he'd do it his way because he knew he had to lead a great organization. So I think in that sense, he ruffled a lot of feathers. And at the same time, because he was willing to stand up to what he believed in, which was the people of AIG aren't the villains here in this story, it really changed morale around at the company.
Peter, tell us briefly, A, how you became involved in this project, writing the book, and B, set the stage a little bit, the government ownership share, the Fed lend, just give us perspective on the whole thing.
Well, I got involved, Jim, actually through my wife, who worked for Bob and had written some of his internal speeches and memos to the staff, and he had asked her to help him with the memoir, and I, through Val, sort of signed on. I became part of that. I'm a reporter and for the Washington Post, and so we became a team, the three of us. And the background is that AIG was in the midst of this whirlwind back during the financial crisis. Got into tremendous trouble in the subprime mortgage market, owing, way more money than it could pay back, and was basically on its hands and knees to the government needing some kind of infusion of bailout money, or it would have sunk, and potentially the economy with it. It just had that huge a stake in what was going on. It got way beyond insurance. Remember, AIG was an insurance company, but it became very involved in financial products of all kinds, as did many other companies on the margins of the financial markets. And as things evolved, both the Fed and the Treasury participated in this massive rescue effort. The Treasury became essentially the owner of AIG. They owned about 80% of the stock, and the Fed was its banker, the only people that would lend it money. And this, you know, was to the tune of, you know, nearly $200 billion. So it was a huge stake for this company. And may I say, Jim, no one had an expectation when this all started that AIG would pay it back. Maybe some small portion. And the idea at the beginning was, well, you know, we'll just sell off bits and pieces of this company, get whatever we can, like we're at a flea market. And at the end of the day, we'll absorb the losses and move on. That was kind of the mindset when this all started, when Bob entered the picture and turned everything around.
I was going to ask you, go to that from Ari, which I find fascinating, which is Bob was not a liquidator, just as Peter was saying, that this Project Destiny, which was on the table, which is sell everything as fast as you can as a fire sale. I'm intrigued that he was brought in when his approach was going to be different than everybody's, from the government to his own board. Did they know that, and how was he able to sell it?
Well, you know, the first thing that he would say when he was here is, when he was approached by Uncle Sam, he did his due diligence, you know, like everybody does when they're going to look for a job. You find out who you're working for, you want to know who the decision makers are, and you really want to know what plan they had for the company. And one of, I think, the key conversations he had was with Jim Milstein, and he was the restructuring officer on behalf of the United States Treasury. He was an investment banker. That was his background, and he was an expert at corporate restructurings. And he sat down with Jim, and Jim really laid out where he thought the restructuring would be and what the strategy was. And at the end of that conversation, my father said to him, well, look, you seem to have a good handle on things. You know, why don't you run the company? And his reply was that he's really not a manager of people. He knows how to get it done, but he's not a manager of people. And that's where my father was tremendously successful. So I think those two guys believed that there was a value, underlying value in the companies. I think there were a lot of people that didn't think that there were. And, you know, you talk about not being a liquidator. One of his famous phrases was, I'm not a liquidator. I don't liquidate things. I build them. And he felt from being at MetLife that there was, that it was really market conditions at the time which created these depressed values. And he thought there was tremendous untapped value, not only in the underlying companies, but in the people that were demonized in the press. And if he could get everyone to stop putting their heads down and thinking, woe is me, and getting back to work and increasing productivity, that you're really going to have tremendous value untapped. And he was a huge believer in that, one of the few.
All right, let me ask you this, Ari, that obviously the thing that AIG became hated for after a while was this $165 million of bonuses that were paid to the financial products group, that small group of people right near here in Wilton, to make sure they stayed on board because they'd written all these credit default swaps that they couldn't honor. And they also, the stock loan piece of it, they'd sort of mismatched assets and liabilities, which to me would put me on the side of these guys shouldn't have been given the bonuses. Your father was very strongly supportive of the employees and even the folks in financial products. How do you explain that?
Well, I think the first comment, his belief was a contract is a contract. And these contracts were put in place as retention bonuses for people that didn't cause the issue. But I think Peter might be able to help me out with the number. I think it's like out of 11,000 or so trades, only about 122 were bad.
Just about.
So it gives you a sense of the scale.
Right.
So you have sort of the smartest guys in the room that are sitting here trying to unwind all of this risk that the company took on. So how do you do that? And you're worried about the $165 million in bonuses, but you know this is a rounded figure to give you a sense. Had those people not been there, and let's say they all just jumped ship, and you couldn't keep them there working, or had they wound it down faster, Project Destiny's plan, or the plan of the company before he got there, was to unwind these, get out of the financial products group at a rapid pace, they would have taken a $20 to $25 billion loss on the trades. And with these people staying at their desk and doing things the right way, and my father negotiating time with the United States government to be able to take that time to be able to unwind these, really understand what's on the books, I think the number was closer to a $4 billion loss. So with the payback, there was a profit of $22.7 billion back to the American taxpayer. You know, you could argue that that was it right there.
In fact, with the final seconds of this segment, Peter, do people even realize generally that AIG paid back all the money?
Well, you know, it's gotten lost in time, basically, in the fog of financial war. So they tried to make the case, but there was such a huge amount of negative publicity around this company that I don't think it ever will completely escape the smell of that period. So no, I think the answer is no.
Listening to Business Talk with Jim Campbell over the Biz Talk Radio Network, 350 stations around the country. Go to biztalkradio.com, find the station closest to you, listen over the Internet, access our podcast. We'll look a little bit back at Bob Benmosche's formative years coming up in segment two.
U2 America TV, featuring original live programs created with you in mind. Engage with shows through social media and the U2 America app. America Trends with Dr. Gina covers the trending topics of the day and allows viewers to interact with the show. Sully's Biz Brew is business with a barroom slant, delivered with a twist. Visit U2America.com to find a channel near you. U2 America, red, white, and you.
I've owned my company for 14 years now, and I can tell you that payroll is a four-letter word. I hate doing it. It eats up hours I don't have, and it costs me money I could be saving. But my accountant's too expensive, and I'm not sure who to call. But I know I need help.
We're Paychex, and we take all the hassles out of small business payroll. We save you time and money. It's easy. Call, fax, or give us your payroll information securely online, and we take care of the rest. We calculate the correct taxes, manage payments and direct deposits. We even send out your checks. Payroll doesn't need to be a four-letter word anymore. We're so sure that we can save you time and money that we'll give you a month's payroll free. Just for calling 877-726-3369. Get 1 month's payroll for free. Call Paychex right now. 877-726-3369. That's 877-726-3369.
Today, more than ever, Americans need a means to protect their life savings. Birch Gold Group offers peace of mind for your nest egg through a rollover to an IRA backed by physical gold. Take advantage of the long-term stability that gold provides by investing in a gold IRA from Birch Gold Group, the precious metal IRA specialists. Call Birch Gold Group today at 888-999-1351 and receive their free information kit on gold. Call 888-999-1351. 888-999-1351.
What is term life insurance? It's basically a financial protection plan for your family if you pass away. It can be a hard purchase. Think about it. It's one of the few major purchases you can make that you will personally never use. But you've got to have it to protect your family. And you owe it to yourself to shop and compare to get the best possible rates. For term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more, call the Term Lifeline today.
800-957-6068. That's 800-957-6068. Remember,
We specialize in term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more, and we have great rates for smokers too. So call today. 800-957-6068. 800-957-6068. That's 800-957-6068.
Have you heard? Proactiv Plus is faster and better than ever. Stay tuned for a million bottle giveaway, and you'll also receive free shipping. Do you have troubled skin? Acne? Well, we have great news. With Proactiv Plus, your acne can heal, and you can help prevent new breakouts from happening. Don't miss this limited-time offer. Give us a call at 800-726-1031, because we're going to let a million people try Proactiv Plus risk-free and get two free gifts, and also receive free shipping when you call right now. You heard it. This offer won't last long. So call Proactiv Plus now, and you'll receive a 60-day risk-free trial of Proactiv Plus, two free extras, and free shipping. Call 800-726-1031. This is our exclusive radio offer, never on TV. Get your risk-free 60-day trial of Proactiv Plus with free shipping. That's right, free shipping. Don't wait. Call 800-726-1031. That's 800-726-1031.
BizTalkRadio.com.
And our guests are Ari Ben-Moshe, the son of Bob Ben-Moshe, the former CEO of AIG, and journalist, Washington Post staff reporter, Peter Marks. Ari, your father had the took on burdens at a very young age, talked about the pressure of managing debt as young as 10 years old, losing his father at a young age. Give us a sense of where this came from.
So you know, if you can imagine you know, being 10 years old and losing your father, and his mother was left with four kids, a motel that was two businesses. They had a restaurant and some cabins, and then a motel that my grandfather just built and had $250,000 in debt. And this was in 1954, and died without a will and died without any life insurance. So, you know, he was brought up at a very young age to roll up his sleeves and go to work. And, you know, that's all really owed to my grandmother, Lillian Ben-Moshe, who really had tremendous amount of integrity and drive and discipline. And this was all up in the small towns of the Catskills in Monticello, New York. So he learned at a very young age that, you know, this is the hand you're dealt, and when you're dealt that hand, you just have to learn how to play it. And he taught us, my sister and I, as we were growing up, you know, those same values that he learned as a young kid.
And your mom was not only tough, but she was a tough sales lady, too. She would tell him at, like, age 10 or 11, give him the pen to get people to sign up to get a room.
Yeah, it was a story of him working at the front desk. People would come in and say, do you have a room? And they say, yes, we have vacancies. And she would say, no, son, you did that all wrong. You have to give them the pen and give them the registration card before you say anything else. And it was a sales pitch of you have to have them help you make the sale. Because once people are given that pen, once they're holding the pen in the hand, you don't even tell them the rate until they ask. So she was just a wealth of those kinds of knowledge. And you would think it's kind of common sense knowledge, but I really think it's something that can be learned and taught.
And I guess delving a little bit into the psychology of this, having lost, having suffered the loss of a parent, he had a complex personal life as an adult. And it struck me particularly because Warren Buffett is my business hero, who also had a complex life. He didn't get divorced from his wife, Susie, but she moved to San Francisco, and he ended up with another woman while he never got divorced. And your dad did kind of the same thing.
Yeah, he did. You know, my sister, you know, put it best once. She said, you know, my dad, you know, didn't, you know, usually when you have a, you know, when you have a relationship and then you leave that relationship, you know, whether it be girlfriend or whatever, throughout your life, you know, you end that relationship and you move to the other. And mm-hmm. you know, she always felt that he sort of had this collection of relationships. He never really left his feelings for the other person behind. And he was like that with every person he met. But, you know, the key here is as he told everyone and also to Peter, he always said he wasn't a saint. And he never claimed to be a saint. And, you know, I think that's what made him a terrific leader for a large organization of people, because he wasn't someone who was sitting in his ivory tower pretending to be perfect.
Mm-hmm. And from your and your sister's perspective, you respected your mother's whole handling of the whole thing and staying with it and all that?
Yeah, you know, it's I think it's not as black and white as you paint it.
Okay.
I think things were off and on, and you know, love is love.
Yeah,
I think that's the best way to put it.
It works. It worked for Buffett, and there's a lot of loyalty there too. And I know in Buffett's approach, Peter, let me ask you this: he grew MetLife as CEO from $11 billion to $40 billion. In a nutshell, why was he so successful at MetLife, and why was he such a successful growth CEO?
Well, he knew how to, in terms of, it bled over to AIG, he knew how to motivate people. He really oversaw the transformation of the sales staff and made it a powerful part of the company. It had been a very lackadaisical, gentlemanly kind of company before Bob came in, and he oversaw not only this this sort of new muscularity in the approach, he also presided over the demutualization of the company, which was a huge transformation for this very genteel organization. And he was the kind of guy, and if you know, I read hundreds of reports, one of those 360 reports they did about him by an outside company to find out his leadership style.
Interesting.
And he was a hands-on guy. He was the guy who he would talk to everybody in the field and in the office. He was just that hands-on.
And when he first got to MetLife, it was about an $11 billion company, market cap. And when he left, it was $40 billion. You know, and how did he do that? And it was always about, he always had this phrase of MetLife, take off the collar, which really means give people the courage to take risk. And he always believed that if you give people the freedom to act and they exercise that freedom responsibly, it's amazing that what can be achieved.
So he goes to AIG, which to me I was tremendous guts, because I know AIG was like 200 operating units that only Hank Greenberg knew what the heck was going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
How did he get in, how did he get his arms around it?
You want me to answer that? He believed that, you know, look, Hank Greenberg grew this company over a 35-year period. They had CEO of CEOs within the organization. there was a roadmap of where the company should be, and that was really what my father's vision was, and he had to make sure that the board was aligned with his vision, that at the end of the day, this is going to be an insurance, a global property casualty insurer, and a large domestic life insurer with other life insurance companies in certain parts of the country. So that was his vision. So he always knew that the outer companies were going to have to be sold off. He was going to get out of ILFC, the aircraft leasing business. But what you have to do in any leadership role like this, especially in times of crisis, is you have to have vision, and then you need to be decisive. That's what he did.
And you're listening to Business Talk with Jim Campbell. We are taking a break now, and then when we come back, we'll talk about paying back America.
Are you worried about losing your home to foreclosure? If you've been threatened with foreclosure or receive legal papers from your bank, you have approximately 30 days to respond. If you do not respond, you could lose your home. You have rights. Act now to protect your rights. You can stay in your home. Many times you can even modify your loan. The bottom line is you can get past this, but you must act right now. If you've been served by your bank and you're worried about losing your home to foreclosure, now is the time to fight back and save your home. Time is limited, so call the professionals at National Foreclosure Defense right now.
800-708-7922. 800-708-7922. 800-708-7922. 800-708-7922. That number again is 800-708-7922.
Hi, I'm Joan London. If you're worried about your parent or loved one living alone, like I was, and you want reliable senior care information, then call A Place for Mom, the nation's largest senior living referral service.
Finding an apartment that was on the courtyard with the view of the trees, the view of the ducks, the stream, the creek, all of that, that was what I needed.
You'll get free information on assisted living, Alzheimer's care, nursing homes, even important financial information. Here's the number.
To speak with a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-451-2976. That's 800-451-2976.
A Place for Mom is a free service, and you can trust them to help you. So if you're struggling to find reliable senior living information, there's a place for answers, A Place for Mom.
To speak with a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-451-2976. That's 800-451-2976.
Do you have an old car sitting in your driveway? How would you like to learn a hassle-free way to get rid of it, help kids in need, and get a great tax donation in the process? It's real easy. One simple free call to our car donation hotline is all it takes. Call the Neshama Foundation
at 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723.
We'll come pick your car up for free and give you a tax donation for the full value of the car, running or not. The value of your unwanted car will go to help kids in need. It's fast and easy. Just call us and your car will be gone and on its way to helping children in 48 hours. And you get a nice tax deduction. Call the Neshama Foundation now to get rid of your car, help kids, and get a tax write-off.
Call 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723. That's 800-721-6723.
How deep in debt are you? $10,000? $15,000? Maybe even more? And every day that goes by, you know what happens. Your debt gets larger and larger and larger. Well, if you've had it with your mushrooming debt problem and the stress it is causing you, make this free call today to the Debt Solutions Network. One quick no-obligation call is all it takes for one of our partner companies to show you how they can help you get out of debt. So if you have $10,000 or more in combined debt and you want to learn how you can solve it, make this free no-obligation call now.
800-814-5035. 800-814-5035.
If you are in serious debt, you have to get out of it and fast. Call my friends at the Debt Solutions Network now.
800-814-5035. 800-814-5035. Call us 24/7. 800-814-5035.
Has your life changed? Are you now in a situation where you need health insurance? Here's some simple advice. Call our health insurance hotline right now. This free service will do all the work for you. Shop the health insurance marketplace and find the plan that best meets your health insurance needs. Don't get lost searching for plans on your own. Let a licensed agent help you for free. According to a report on CNN Money, almost half of those eligible for subsidies are paying less than $3 a day for bronze or silver plans. Remember, under Obamacare, most Americans qualify for health insurance. So get ready to let us do all the work for you and find out the best health insurance plan for your needs. Call this number now.
800-659-7975. 800-659-7975. For your free health insurance quote, call now. 800-659-7975. 800-659-7975.
BizTalkRadio.com.
And we're back. Bob Ben-Moshe, the former CEO of AIG's book, Good for the Money, My Fight to Pay Back America. Ari, I want to start with you on this one, and we've sort of gotten around this a little bit, but there were five CEOs in the 5 years before he came on board. They were obviously ineffective or failed. Ed Liddy was the one before from Allstate, and I don't know whether he was the wrong guy in your mind or too nice of a guy, but how do you become the successful CEO after five have gone by the wayside?
Well, people, you know, would say to my father, you know, look, you know, it was Hank Greenberg, a legend, and you had Martin Sullivan, Robert Willemstad, Ed Liddy. You know, Ed Liddy, it's you know, in the depths of the crisis, he's taking the job for a dollar. Everyone thinks the America's not going to get paid back. You got nothing to lose. You have no downside. And he would say, I have tremendous downside. I have my own reputation. So he was, that's my most valuable asset. So he had a lot to lose. The first thing he did was he went up to financial products to actually speak with the people in that organization.
Which no one had done, apparently.
No one did it. I mean, and it was mind-boggling to him. The other thing he did was he actually spoke, God forbid, to Hank Greenberg. I mean, God forbid he should talk. And they had a very good relationship from when he was at MetLife, and Hank actually recommended my father for the position. So he had a lot to do with my dad being there. But look, he was not going to sit around and lock himself up in an office and try and financially dismantle this company. He had a town hall style leadership model, which was really getting out to the front lines, skipping middle management, skipping senior management, speaking with the people on what the actual issues are, and then resolve them one by one.
How is it that it was a very siloed company. That he was able to, A, break through that, and B, to understand it.
You know, that really goes out to Peter Hancock, because if you recall, that's what he joined the company as, which was the chief risk officer of the company. And really, how do you understand how each business unit, with the decisions and the businesses that they're in, affect other parts of the organization? And Peter was instrumental in breaking down these silos and really having each group understand how they're impacting others. So I would say a lot goes out to Peter for really digging in and understanding how each piece fits.
Is it your feeling that AIG could not have survived without your father?
They needed someone at the time after the congressional hearing for Ed Liddy, and I don't know if you know this, Jim. My father said yes the first time. There was an investment banker at Goldman Sachs, Chris Cole, who did a lot of work for insurance companies that called my father. I remember being in the kitchen when he got the call and was speaking with Chris about the opportunity, and he said yes. I told him to say yes. He said yes the first time, but I think with the Paulson contact with Ed Liddy and Goldman Sachs, he took the job. And look, if my father didn't take it the second time, and especially certainly with how Ed Liddy was treated by our government officials, I think the list was very short.
By the way, your dad didn't seem to want to work for $1 a year.
Look, yeah, it's a message, and yeah. Everything he did was strategic. Executive compensation didn't cause the financial crisis, despite what public anger said otherwise. So
in fact,
he knew that. that you need a talented people in the organization.
That's a good point. It's an interesting point you just made that I want to follow up on, which is that he threatened to resign a lot. The chairman said he was volatile, maybe too erratic. Was there some of what I would call the Nixon madman strategy to this, which is, you know, trying to make it seem like you might be crazy to get your points through and to get stuff done?
You know, I think to the layman, it may seem that what he was doing was crazy. His decisions were crazy. But look, you have to put it in context that if they didn't pay him fair compensation, and if he wasn't going to be given the freedom to do his job the way he needed to, you know, like I said earlier, his reputation was his most valuable asset, and he wasn't going to sit there and let someone bring him down because the visions aren't aligned collectively. So, you know, I don't think if he didn't get what was promised to him in the beginning, you know, you have to do your due diligence and know what, you know, how the table is set that you're about to sit down at, you know, he would have left. I think it worked for him, and people might say he was incredibly intelligent in masterful negotiations. But look, he was serious, and people took him seriously all the time.
I like one of the lines he says to some of the executives we don't think are fully on board, saying, "I know you think I'm going to blow up, but it's not going to happen as fast as you think. So you better get on board now."
I love that.
It's a great line. Peter, let me ask you now. There were a lot of myths that you would have assumed would have been truisms, that there would have been huge turnover, that all the good people would have left, that the customers would have left, that they sold off Crown Jewels, nothing was left. Were those all myths? Those ended up not being the case?
Well, it wasn't so much that they weren't going to sell off some of the Crown Jewels. What Bob's genius was that he understood intrinsically, almost magically, I think, the value of things. He knew when to sell them. So there were plans to sell off some of the big pieces of the company that actually did get sold off. It's just that when he waited till the markets recovered and there was actually a moment when it made sense to sell them, it wasn't a panic. And it goes back to your very first question, Jim, about why Bob and what he was bringing to the table. One of the most important things that Jim Milstein wanted him to do was to stand up to everybody else in the process. Milstein, the restructuring guy, understood that this company was being torn apart, both from inside and outside, and he needed someone who could stand up both to what was going on there and to what was said about this company in Congress. And Bob was the guy. And you asked Ari, would this company exist if it weren't for Bob? I say no, it would not exist if it weren't for Bob Benmosche.
Let me ask both of you, obviously for Ari it's personal, for Peter it's a corporate governance issue. He gets cancer, but this guy decides that neither he or the board will release the exact details, sort of reminding me of Steve Jobs. Now, that raises governance issues, but it also allowed him to keep his credibility. How do you guys come down on all that?
Are you?
Yeah, sure. Look, it's, you know, he said, "Are you my doctor? If you're not my doctor and you're not treating me, what do you need to know what kind of cancer I have? You need to know that I have cancer. You need to know that my short-term prognosis is good, and if that changes, we need to do something." So he needed to speak to the board to make sure that they had a contingency plan in place, and also they need to start working on a succession plan further down the road. And, you know,
I think it's important to say he also thought the day that he said lung cancer, he'd be finished. They would write him off and they would just count the days. That was his thought. The interesting question, Jim, is, you know, in this day and age, how transparent does a company have to be? Mm-hmm. How much does the CEO owe his shareholders? Amazingly, and in my mind, it's a stunning part of the story, no one ever pushed him. No one in the financial press ever forced him. Once he said, "I'm not saying, everybody shut up," which is really interesting, given that it's a fairly aggressive press. I was kind of surprised that that didn't happen.
You know, and but he would also say, look, I'm not going to tell you because the last thing I need is my children to read in the papers that I'm going to lose an arm or that because some expert says this is going to happen to me or, that, you know, what's going to happen to me is going to happen to me. And, you know, I think AIG during that period of time really wrote somewhat of the playbook on what should be disclosed and what shouldn't have to be disclosed.
And you're listening to Business Talk with Jim Campbell from our flagship stations, Yale Radio, WYBC, and WGCH, Greenwich, Connecticut. At our last national segment coming up, we'll look back at the AIG story.
Have you written a book and want to get it published? Then call Page Publishing ASAP. We're looking for authors of all types of books. And unlike most publishers, Page Publishing will take the time to review each and every book submitted to us. And we'll give you our feedback. And if we like what we read, we will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, the Apple iTunes Store, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets. We handle everything. Editing, cover design, copyright protection, printing, publicity, and distribution. So if you've written a novel, children's book, cookbook, inspirational work, poetry, or a biography and want to get it published, call Page Publishing now for your free author submission kit. Your road to fame and fortune could very well start with this simple phone call.
888-785-0618. 888-785-0618. 888-785-0618. That's 888-785-0618.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that may allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the Better Business Bureau, so call now. 800-658-3876. That's 800-658-3876. U.S. Tax Shield, 800-658-3876.
We paid less for our Craftmatic today than we did 20 years ago.
If you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and free information on today's Craftmatic adjustable beds. And then decide when you see how little they cost. Rated number one by consumers nationwide on ConsumerAffairs.com. Craftmatic beds come in all mattress types, including cool gel memory foam for up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand. Enjoy temporary relief of low back pain, poor circulation, nighttime heartburn, mild arthritis. You'll sleep better in a Craftmatic adjustable bed. So if you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and information. And then decide when you see how little they cost. Discover Craftmatic for less, up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand.
Call 1-800-316-5271. That's 1-800-316-5271. 1-800-316-5271. Call now.
What is term life insurance? It's basically a financial protection plan for your family if you pass away. It can be a hard purchase. Think about it. It's one of the few major purchases you can make that you will personally never use. But you've got to have it to protect your family. And you owe it to yourself to shop and compare to get the best possible rates. For term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more, call the Term Lifeline today.
800-957-6068. That's 800-957-6068. Remember,
We specialize in term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more. And we have great rates for smokers, too. So call today. 800-957-6068. 800-957-6068. That's 800-957-6068.
This is a national health care alert from the Health Hotline. If you, a family member, or a loved one suffers from knee pain and have Medicare as your primary insurance, we've got great news. You could qualify for a pain-relieving knee brace at little or no cost to you. Get free delivery, and all the paperwork is handled by our accredited suppliers at no charge to you. So if you're on Medicare and have knee pain, don't wait. You may qualify to immediately receive a pain-relieving knee brace at little or no cost. Friendly agents are standing by 24/7 to help you. We also have other pain-relieving braces, too, for your shoulder, ankle, or back. You may be eligible to get these items and more at little or no out-of-pocket cost. Our friendly representatives are standing by now to help you, so please call now.
Call 855-227-0301. That's 855-227-0301. Again, 855-227-0301. That's 855-227-0301.
BizTalkRadio.com.
Our guests, Ari Ben-Moshe and Peter Marks, were talking about Ari's dad, Bob Ben-Moshe of AIG. I want to just finish up on the governance issue in two ways, first with Ari and then Peter. The first one is, Ari, you got to describe to us or give us some of the color behind the epic battle, which is really amazing, between the CEO, Bob Ben-Moshe, and the chairman, Harvey Golub, at AIG.
If you asked my dad, after he'd gotten there, if he'd known what he'd known, would he have taken the job?
Mm-hmm.
And his answer would have been no. He worked with Dennis Dammerman, who was on the board at that time and also has passed away, and he had to leave the board early on. And he was really an advocate for my father back when he worked at GE, and my dad was at Payne Webber during the Kidder-Peabody merger. So if my dad knew how misaligned the board was on his vision, he wouldn't be able to achieve what he achieved. And he found that in Harvey. I think Harvey felt that AIG should be broken up, and my father felt that the whole was worth more than the parts. He felt undermined. He felt undermined with the executive group. And then after it really came down to the Prudential UK, which is not affiliated with the U.S. Prudential deal, where he was voted down with a lower price change. And after that, it became really, really bad. And my father said, look, I can't work this way. It's either you or me. And it came down to this boardroom showdown, as you say. And it's like you can't make this up in the movies.
Yeah.
And you have at the end of the day, Morris Offit, who was one of the board members at the time, after Harvey went into the, they were both asked to leave. Harvey says, look, Bob, we need to work on a relationship. And my dad said, Harvey, we don't have a relationship. And then he storms off and leaves and actually goes back into the boardroom to try and plead to that Bob needs to leave. And Morris, who my father thought wasn't an advocate for him, said, look, Harvey, it's easier to replace a chairman than it is a CEO. You have to go. And he eventually resigned. And from that moment on, it was, you know, if you think of a graph, it was just an upward trend. I mean, everyone was aligned. The board was aligned. Steve Miller was a terrific chairman. And it really freed up a lot of tension in the organization because you were aligned with the leadership's vision.
The guts and the courage also that amazed me is that Harvey comes in during this and says, you know, maybe we should get along. And your dad refused at that point to bend because he knew it wasn't going to happen.
You know, what is he going to work on it for 3 months, and then it's going to be back to the same old? Look, I remember him telling me that, you know, he envisioned, because he was a Florida resident, and Harvey, I believe, was Florida also, that they might have a small satellite office there and collaborate and work on things.
A big part of the psychology appears to be, to use FU money, that your dad felt he had. That was sort of like his blanket, right, all the time.
Said to me, when you wear wet shoes, you never want to put on those wet shoes again. So growing up the way he did, money was very important to him, and not having any debts was very important to him. When you're your whole family is saddled by it.
Peter, briefly, on the governance issue, where do you come down on whether the chairman of the board and the CEO should be separate positions, especially in light of what we've just been talking about?
Well, you know, there was no history of this being separate at AIG.
Right.
It was almost an experiment, you know, and I think that the problem was there was no time for these guys to define their roles. They both came in almost at the same time. They had very, vague notions of how they were going to split it up. Bob thought that Harvey was going to be the front man for, like, what was happening in Washington. He didn't want to have to deal with those people. Mm-hmm. But Harvey had a completely different vision of what he was doing. I think it was a huge mistake to have gone into that. It caused a tremendous amount of extra turmoil in this organization. And I think it distracted Bob, if anything, from he spent a lot of time his first year dealing with the Michigas, as we say, of this problem. So it was a miscalculation, and it was, you know, fortunately rectified because Bob was a singular CEO. He was a force of nature, and everyone recognized it.
When the shareholders were going after Jamie Dimon, I remember my father getting on the TV and saying, look, there's no we in CEO.
There was a lot of controversy, and it bothered me that, you know, a big chunk of that bailout, what people may not realize, was to actually provide collateral to the counterparties. Goldman Sachs, for instance, got $13 billion. So it made mm-hmm. AIG look bad. It looked like a backdoor because mm-hmm. they took the blame. Should there have been should there have been haircuts there, and should these guys like Goldman not have gotten 100%?
Absolutely. And Bob was more outraged than anybody.
Yeah.
He saw this happening. It infuriated him that they were being paid off 100 cents on the dollar. In fact, his idea at the very beginning, his first notion, and Ari can back me up, his idea was nobody gets paid back until we start to sort this thing out. So, he called them vultures.
Yeah.
And it was hundreds of millions of dollars that was going out the door when he was watching, you know, the people at Financial Products be vilified, be followed home from work, be harassed, have their children at school threatened. So, he felt this world was topsy-turvy, upside down completely.
What he said was, look, they absolutely shouldn't have been given 100 cents on the dollar with these collateral agreements. You know, I would say the one person who couldn't stand it more was Hank Greenberg, and then my father for a lot of reasons. But look, what he did commend the government for doing is being decisive and taking action.
And I must say it didn't look good either because Hank Paulson was Secretary of Treasury and Goldman Sachs got bailed out through the back door.
Yes. Yeah, the optics were as bad as you can get them. But look, Bernanke and Paulson put their heads together and actually did something. Everyone can look back and say it should have been different. What he did give them a thumbs down for, and that's for the United States government, is once our economy started improving and things were better and the rating agencies got better handle on companies and how much capital they have, they were too scared to sell people.
Well, it's been a very quick hour, and really it comes down to the fact that Bob Benmosche was really an American hero here, not only for, helping avoid the country's economic financial system collapsing, but also doing this while he was fighting with cancer that he knew was fatal. It's a $60 billion company. He did $205 billion of transactions, turned, as was mentioned earlier, a $23 billion profit to the government on the $182 billion of bailout money. It's pretty amazing, under 3 years, too. Thanks to Ari Benmosche, Peter Marks. The book, again, is Good for the Money, My Fight to Pay Back America. It's written with Valerie Wendy, who's AIG's head of corporate citizenship that was mentioned, published by St. Martin's. This has been Business Talk with Jim Campbell, podcasts available on iTunes. You can subscribe to them. Thanks to Ari Benmosche, Peter Marks. Thanks to our national audience for listening. See you next Sunday on Business Talk with Jim Campbell.
The opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com. BizTalkRadio.com.